So in module 11 here, what we're going to be, we're going to move on from directory synchronization, and we're going to start talking about proper SSO, single sign-on using Active Directory Federation services. Now, ADFS isn't the only type of single sign-on environment that you can use, but it's the one that ties in best with Active Directory, and it's the easiest one, and it's the supported option with Office 365. So what I'm going to be covering then, we'll talk about some of the planning issues that you're going to need to look at, and should be no surprises, there's quite a bit of planning to think about. Then we'll show the actual we'll talk about the installation and managing of ADFS servers and some of the issues that will affect there. Martin's going to do a quick demonstration of the configuration options within the within the ADFS configuration wizard, and then I'm going to finish off by talking about how you install and manage the ADFS proxy servers. There is a new role, by the way, in Windows Server 2012 R2, which is a web.
WAP.
Right, web access proxy.
Yes.
Now, that can be used under certain circumstances as a replacement for an ADFS proxy server. It was a very new announcement. It actually only came out last week while we were, in fact, giving the first delivery of this course. So we haven't updated our content to include that. But it is another option that you've got for providing, effectively, an ADFS proxy server. So in our planning side, what we're going to look at here is we'll take an overview of what ADFS is. I'll just be really skating on the surface here because it's a huge topic in its own right. Talk about how ADFS works with Office 365, cover some of the planning considerations. We'll discuss some of the clients and client profiles, review the topologies. I'll take you through some of the requirements for ADFS. We'll touch briefly on the capacity planning requirements and also high availability, how we plan for high availability. Because with ADFS, this is different to DirSync. With DirSync, it didn't really matter if your DirSync server went down. With ADFS, if your ADFS servers go down, your users won't be able to log in. So high availability is extremely important with ADFS. So ADFS then, well, I mean, it's a mechanism for making users so that users can log on with a single set of credentials, so their username and their password, and then they can authenticate not just to Office 365, it could be to other services as well, it could be to line of business applications, it could be to CRM systems, it could be to third-party software, it doesn't matter. What it is because it's a it's a standard-based, isn't it? It's Security Assertion Markup Language, SAML.
Yeah, SAML.
Yeah, so that's an XML-style way of passing information. They use XML-based tokens to pass information between these disparate systems. So we federate our systems together, and it's establishing a trust relationship. Mm. So it's a bit like... It's a bit like an NT4 trust, isn't it? Remember those days? You know, you had to point in the direction of the trust. So you have a trust relationship between, let's say, an application, something like a CRM system, and a claims provider or something like a directory service. Mm-hmm. So we have a relying party trust between the application and ADFS, and we also have a claims provider trust between ADFS and whatever directory service it is that we're authenticating to. In this case, Active Directory. It doesn't have to be Active Directory, though. You know, we can do things. You can use something like Shibboleth, and then also not only can Shibboleth connect to Active Directory, but it can connect to third-party directory services as well. So this is the way of giving you the sort of, because it's an open, this is about an open standards, it does give you the ability to connect Office 365 into other directory services and configure SSO with them as well. The authentication process, the authentication takes place against Active Directory. So Active Directory authenticates the users. Then ADFS, when a user then tries to access a service that is using single sign-on, the service then queries ADFS and says, has that person logged on with you? If ADFS says, yes, this person has authenticated with Active Directory, ADFS then builds a thing called a token, and a token consists of a number of claims. So there's quite a few different sort of claims that you can have, aren't there?
Yeah, so you can have different claims, like, for example, is this person a member of a certain group, mm-hmm. or is he coming from a certain network, or is he using a certain type of client? So there's various different ways that you can actually evaluate if those claims meet your criteria and if you're going to allow him into the service.
So, and so if we've matched those claims, what then ADFS does is it puts those claims together in a token. It encrypts the token so that the token itself can't be altered in transit. And then there's optional SSL security as well. It then passes that that token, typically on a SSL secured channel, to across the relying party trust to the relying party, and the clue is in the title. The relying party relies on ADFS to establish that user is authenticated with the directory service, and then that token itself is then presented to the service and is used to create a logon token, and then the user actually logs on with the logon token. So we can get quite a bit of backwards and forwards in, can't we? Particularly with things like the passive profile, the web services profile. The browser may authenticate the user, get a redirect message, goes back to ADFS, goes back to Active Directory, and so on. But the result is that what the user sees is, right, I just type in my username and my password, and I'm authenticated. And with domain join clients, assuming that they check the option for remember my username and password, they only need to log on once. They actually just log on to the domain, onto the machine on the domain, and then they can open Outlook. But when they're opening Outlook, it's actually presenting their credentials to Exchange Online, and then they're communicating. So the end user version sometimes they can be prompted for passwords again, and there's actually an option in ADFS to say, make sure you always subsequently authenticate to the service. Mm. But you do have the option just to have sort of full pass-through authentication. There's been a number of ADFS versions. It actually started off as a standalone installation, and then it became part of, it was installed with 2008 R2, wasn't it? Mm. We're now up to, well, certainly the version we're using, 2012, is 2.1, and I think it's version 3 now, isn't it, in 2012 R2?
Yes, there's a lot of customizations that was made available in ADFS in Windows Server 2012 R2, where you can now change the logon screen and so on and make it prettier for your users, and there's a bunch more other things as well.
So that's just a very brief overview of what ADFS is. There's a lot of content out there on the web that you can search for to give you a better picture of exactly what's involved in it. Now, in terms of its interaction with Office 365, we're using this, what we call the security token infrastructure. ADFS is an example of an STS, as is Shibboleth as well. And it's what it's doing is it's providing this way of creating tokens containing claims the user has been authenticated, and passing those tokens across to Office 365 so that the user can then log on to whatever service it is in Office 365 that they want to use. It does work alongside and with DirSync. The point here being that if you're setting up ADFS, you will set up DirSync as well, because you want basically the user management to be taking place automatically, as well as the single sign-on, because you want user accounts to be automatically moved across, synchronized with Office 365. Comparing it though to password sync, now this is generated a lot of interest, isn't it? Mm. Because there are certain things that you can only use ADFS for.
Yeah.
So that's, for example, hybrid link, hybrid SharePoint, both of those you need single sign-on login for that to work. Now there is now a new two-factor authentication is actually supported directly in Office 365, isn't it? Not
yes.
all types, but
yes. So we now have multi-factor authentication in Office 365 as well, where you can enable a user for multi-factor authentication, and that will then work on three methods. Either when the user logs on, the system will call him and he can confirm that he did log on, or it will send a text message to him on his mobile phone, and he needs to enter that special one-time use PIN on the login screen.
So that's a bit like when we actually register with Office 365. It's a similar process, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah, that's what the single sign-on extension to there's two-factor authentication extension to Office 365 does. What we haven't quite got yet is like support for certificates or hardware PIN devices yet,
some,
have we?
You know, like the things that's got a number that changes all the time.
Yeah,
or
the one I've got one for my bank. You know, I think it always generates the same number, but there we go.
So if
you want smart card-based authentication, again, you're going to have to look at two-factor authentication through ADFS. Okay, but Password Sync will work quite happily with Exchange Online. So if you're just using Exchange Online in hybrid mode, then I would strongly recommend that you just look at DirSync plus Password Sync rather than go down all the effort of installing ADFS. Good news, though, about ADFS is that you can quite happily install and run that in Windows Azure. And in fact, we had a student on the course last week who had done exactly that. They'd already set up an ADFS environment in Windows Azure in virtual machines. They had to put a domain controller up there, obviously. But yep, that can be quite happily done. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that type of infrastructure being put up in the cloud in Windows Azure, which of course is exactly what we do on this course.
Yeah.
Which is why this course is such fun. So come on it. Okay, so some planning considerations then. What do we need to think about? So you need to think about browser support and which endpoints and how you're going to connect, and there's a lot of the considerations that need to be covered there. You know, which profiles are you using? Are you using the active profile? Are you using the metadata exchange profile? Or are you using the passive profile? What about, what's going to be your arrangements of your ADFS servers, and how are you going to do load balancing? How are you going to load balance your proxies? How many ADFS servers are you going to have? How many ADFS proxies? And then that's to do with how many users you've got and your requirements for high availability. Again, you need to make sure that your Active Directory has been nicely cleaned up. And again, if you've cleaned it up for DirSync, then it should be nice and clean for ADFS as well. Host name records. You'll need a host name record for the users to connect to into ADFS. And again, that ADFS record, because we're going to need to use third-party certificates. That host name record, let's say it's adfs.lucerne.publishing.com, that needs to match to the either the common name on the certificate or one of the subject alternate names on your SSL certificate. Again, client connections are SSL encrypted to ADFS. So you'll need to make sure you've got your DNS host records done. You'll need to have purchased or been issued with a certificate. By the way, for test environments, you can get hold of, there are providers who will basically give out a level one test certificate for you to configure and use with ADFS. You need to import that certificate. You then need to export it again as a PFX file, and then you'll be seeing that Martin do that during this demo. Make sure that you've got the right database to run ADFS on, just like with DirSync. It's another database, but in this particular case, we need to make it highly available. So things like your configuration database, attribute databases for ADFS, need to consider high availability there. You can configure ADFS in a farm. You can run the Windows internal database with up to 5 ADFS servers. If you've got more than 5, then what you need to do is to configure a full version of SQL Server. In terms of your capacity planning, then there's how many users you've got and how many ADFS servers you'll need. Typically, at the bottom end, it becomes the messages can be a little bit confused because you wouldn't really. I know that you can. In fact, this is an R2 thing, isn't it? That you can run ADFS on a domain controller now. You don't have to have that as a separate service, but you wouldn't really want to publish out a service that's running on your domain controllers directly out onto the internet. So you'll probably want to have at least one. At least 2 ADFS servers and at least 1 or 2 proxies that are publishing out onto the internet. High availability, so that's where we need to think about things like what type of, if you're going to use network load balancing, that's generally the main sort of high availability technology we're using, aren't we? If you've got hardware load balancers, then you may be using those hardware load balancers and make sure that, and again, tying that into the DNS record that points to the shared IP address that of the load balancer rather than to the individual IP addresses or address of any one, either proxy server or ADFS server. Remember, if you can remember back to module 1, we talked about split brain DNS. Again, that requirement to have so that internal clients can resolve the same address as external or other, resolve to the same, resolve to different endpoints so that the internal clients connect to the ADFS servers, the external clients connect to the ADFS proxies. They all use the same host name, but they're pointing to different IP addresses on the internal and external networks. And then you need to think about filtering for access. So you can use claim rules to filter people, for example, so that people from different parts of the world may not be able to access. You can restrict people on terms on based on geography or based on other rules, other claims rules within ADFS. And I'm sure you appreciate this is a huge subject. I'm really just giving you a little bit of an introduction to what's involved in configuring ADFS. So the ADFS client, well, the main client for this is our Microsoft Online Services, Online Services Sign-In Assistant. Remember, that was the one that we downloaded when we did the, when we looked at, it was Windows Active Active Directory, wasn't it?
Yeah. So when we installed the different configurations for setting up directory sync and also setting up, configuring the remote PowerShell settings for Active Directory.
Yep, so that component again is very important with ADFS because that's the one again that helps provide our single sign-on. That's included in the Office 365 desktop setup, by the way. That's one of the included components. You can roll that out through System Center Configuration Manager, or you can do it as a manual install from the Office 365 website. There can be some sort of issues. It supports any browser with JavaScript support will support the passive browser profile. So that will allow you to log on to, let's say, Outlook. Outlook Web Access, but using your domain credentials rather than using your Office 365 credentials. By the way, what you'll see, and you see this if you say log on to your Microsoft account or even to a Content Master account as we have, is that because we have ADFS set up, if I put my email address into the logon field, what I then says, I'll see a little message saying redirecting to your provider, and then it will actually prompt me to add on to put in my domain credentials, and then I can log on to Office 365 with my domain credentials. So in terms of topologies, there's quite a few sort of planning decisions you need to make, thinking about whether you're going to have a standalone servers versus a server farm. Again, the recommendation is that you have some form of ADFS server farm using network load balancing, and also you have a proxy array, again, using network load balancing at the front end. And that proxy array will be in your perimeter network, and the proxy servers themselves will be workgroup joined. They're not going to be domain joined computers. They'll simply be existing in their own workgroups. Need to think about, am I going to have Windows internal database against SQL Server? There are actually some slight differences in terms of things like how the claims are handled if you have SQL Server, because it does things like helps ensure repudiation of where you've got man-in-the-middle attacks on a token itself. The full version of SQL Server will help guard against those. So there are one or two functional differences as well. But certainly for test environments, Windows internal database is absolutely fine. Again, your server numbers, if you've got sort of 60,000 users, then you're typically looking at about four or five ADFS servers and probably about a similar number of proxy servers as well. Are you going to use ADFS proxies? Well, certainly that is a recommended approach. With this latest release of Windows Server 2012 R2, then I think we're going to see more organizations starting to use that web proxy role instead of using ADFS proxies. And where are you going to put the servers? I say proxies go in the perimeter network, the ADFS servers go on the internal network, and they are as protected as well as your domain controllers are. So some requirements then. Not surprisingly, with ADFS, we do need Active Directory. I think the clue is in the title there. Yes, we do need to have DNS set up and configure it correctly. Think about, again, the internal and the external namespaces in domains and making sure that we can resolve the connection host name either to the internal IP address and both the internal IP address and the external IP address. Yes, you will need a certificate, and that certificate needs to match the host name of your connection point. And again, if you just make that consistent, that will mean that you don't have to have the same URL, different URLs for your internal users as for an external users. And as we pointed out before, anything where the users only have to remember one thing is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Networking, again, needs to be fully routable network, with DNS set up. And I've already mentioned about the database and the versions of SQL Server to run with that. In terms of capacity planning, there is a tool called the ADFS Capacity Planning Spreadsheet. It's available for download. You can find that, plug in your details about how many users you've got, and it will chuck out how many ADFS servers and ADFS proxies you need to use. It's what's particularly important, though, is to consider the peak usage. And, of course, for many organizations, that peak usage is, what, sort of 8:30, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, something like that?
Yeah, Monday morning when everybody gets home or gets to work and everybody is logging on. That would be your peak usage.
Yeah, so a good example of that is something like a school. You know, students all pile in, the bell rings, and at 9 o'clock, bang, everybody logs on, you know, within a five-minute gap or something. Yeah. And you need your ADFS server scale to be able to cope with that number of simultaneous log-ons. High availability, we've already discussed this, but this is an important point to make. The fact is that this is not like DirSync. You do need to protect your ADFS servers. No ADFS server environment, no logon. So that means that your users, your number of complaints to the help desk will suddenly rocket up, and basically users, as far as they're concerned, they might as well go home because they can't log on, they can't do anything. So things like making sure that you've got network load balancing in place. So if one server in the array goes down, then the whole array itself doesn't go down. Making sure that you've got an array IP address and a certificate host name is DNS host name ties into the certificate name, ties into the array IP address. And then that, and making sure that if one array members can be taken out, can be recycled, can be patched and rebuilt and or brought back in again. To make sure that you've got continuity of service there. Also, thinking about protecting SQL Server. What you would say on sort of SQL Server protection technologies? Because I know there's a whole bunch of new ones come out, or there's a series of new SQL Server protection high availability options there, aren't there?
Yeah, so you can look at database mirroring, or you can look at the new database availability system that's now available in SQL. So SQL clustering is really what enables those high availability features. So it is really critical to make sure that your ADFS is up all the time. Because if it's down, like you say, then the whole system is down. You don't want the whole thing to just balance on that one server.
Once you've got single sign-on implemented, you know, if ADFS goes down, it is as serious as your domain controllers dropping out. It's that, so you need to have that sort of level of thought, that sort of level of planning, and that sort of level of protection. But you know, if you need it for a business requirement, then you need it. And say, if you need two-factor authentication with smart cards or whatever, or hardware tokens, or you need hybrid link, hybrid SharePoint, then you will be considering it. And actually, I mean, you know, Content Master, we implement this. We implement ADFS internally. So far it's been great, absolutely great. Okay, so there is also this thing called the Office 365 adapter for Azure virtual machines. And again, this is a way of implementing ADFS in Azure, or you can simply just build your ADFS servers, put them up into Azure along with, you know, at least a couple of domain controllers, and make sure that you've got a reliable environment. And that makes sure that you've got cloud-based authentication for your organization. And I think we're going to see that as being, again, a very popular option for organizations to make ADFS part of their highly available infrastructure. So some best practices then. Do plan for either proxy servers or ADFS, so the new web server role in 2012 R2. Make sure that your federation servers can't be directly reached from the internet. They can only be reached via the ADFS proxies, which are publishing out that information. Get DNS properly prepared. Make sure you've got the right host names, and that's both on the internal DNS and your external DNS. Pay attention to networking, firewall, security design, all of those sort of standard practices, as you would expect with deploying any major service into your environment. And believe me, this is a major service. And then make sure when you do this certificate export that you've including the private key in your export process. And again, that's what we've done in your demonstration, isn't it? Right. So those are sort of planning factors. And again, I apologize because this is such a big topic. I've really literally given you a sort of, you know, an overview of it all. But there's a lot of really good content out there about how to configure ADFS servers. If you go and find that, then hopefully that will sort of fill in the sort of gaps in the detail there. So now what we need to look at is how do we install and manage those servers. So we'll talk about the preparation process, installing the ADFS server role. How do we use the configuration wizard? And yes, it is wizard-based, but don't be fooled. This is not a particularly easy wizard to. You've got to make sure that you've put everything in place to make sure that wizard will run. We'll then go talk about the process of converting your MSOL domain, your Office 365 domain, from a standard domain to a federated domain, which is what puts in the relying party trust into your ADFS server. Talk a bit about managing those ADFS servers, and then if you need to, converting your domain back from federated to standard again, if you want to remove single sign-on, and then finish off with some best practices. Right, so what things we need to do to prepare for our ADFS installation? So we need to have a service account, and so that's going to be, what sort of permissions are we talking about on there?
Yeah, so it needs to be able to run as a service, that account.
That's definitely one of them.
And it needs to be able to access the Active Directory because it's setting up that claims relying trust back to AD.
And it also needs to log on as a batch file as well.
Yeah.
So that's your service account that you need to create and make sure that that's implemented. You need to have your certificates. And again, that certificate, either the common name or one of the subject alternate names matches the DNS host name. So, I mean, I know that there are some good reasons for using common subject alternate names. Is this if we just want to have one certificate to do everything, isn't it?
Yeah, so in a lot of organizations, you are only going to buy one certificate that you'll use for Exchange. You maybe use it for Link and all the services that is provided through Link on-premises. So you can end up with a very big certificate. So just add on one more name in there for the Federation server, and you're good to go.
Indeed, yes. Alternatively, you could have multiple certificates for each service if you wanted to. It depends on how what works best for you as an organization. The load balancing you need to set up, so things like NLB, etc., or hardware load balancing. And then we've already mentioned about DNS as well and the importance of tying in those DNS to certificates is absolutely vital. What we do, we're going to install the ADFS server role, and we've got a wizard to do that. Why not? Let's sort of crack on. What we'll do, what you'll actually see as part of this wizard process is assigning this public certificate to that gets assigned to the default website in IIS. Okay, so if you'd like to take us through the configuration wizard then.
Okay, so I just want to point out a few things just to show you guys that we're not doing smoke and mirrors here, but what I've done before we started this demo is I've imported the certificate into my local computer Hive for certificates so that I can use that certificate later on.
And so if you just want to sort of show us some of the details on that, you haven't used subject alternate names in this though, have you?
So I haven't. In this case, the certificate was issued to the Federation service, but the certificate actually does have subject alternative names, which I can use for Exchange.
Oh, right,
you
did include those. Okay.
Yeah. But it's important to note as well that this certificate does have the private key, so it can be used for SSL. And it's also important to note that the digit cert is trusted through the system. Okay. So that is basically what I had to make sure that the certificate is fine.
Can we actually get that a little bit bigger on that? Sorry, if you're finished with that console, isn't it?
Yeah, so okay. I'm finished with that console.
No problem.
Okay, so the next thing that I want to just show is the Federation setup. And this is where you're going to access this from the server tools, your server manager.
So you've actually installed the role, haven't you?
I've already installed the role. So you would go in here and you would just go into add roles and features and add the ADFS server.
Okay, the reason we've done that is simply because it does take a little while to set up. You know, there are some time lags involved in this setup process.
So once you've completed that, you can then go and start the ADFS management process, which will configure it.
Okay. So again, we've got our ADFS console with the snap in loaded.
So once we've run that, we can actually go and start the configuration. So
we kick off the wizard.
Kick off that wizard. And the first thing that it asks us is we want to create a new service or we want to add to an existing server.
So adding to a server, that would be if we've got an existing server farm and let's say we're adding a secondary to the primary server there. Okay, mm-hmm. Great.
Okay. And then the next thing is we're going to create a new farm or we can say this will be a standalone server and this is really only for testing and playing and so on. So you want to go with a farm setup.
Yeah, because if there is any chance that you're going to add servers to that, you're going to have more than one ADFS server, you'll always go for the farm option.
Mm-hmm. And then the next step is it will ask you for a certificate name. So it picked up the certificates that I have on this machine and what the name will be. So it used the primary name and you'll see that all the other names...
We've got the subject alternate names in there as well, haven't we?
Yeah, so if this was a subject alternative name, we could just pick one of those other names.
Okay, no problem.
Okay. Next thing is that service account that we need to choose. So I'm just going to choose my service account that I've created before.
So this is the one that's got the log on as a batch writes and also... run as a service rights, indeed. So you wouldn't use your domain control, your domain admin password, definitely not.
It's always important to make use of a least use permission.
Yes, you absolutely must have a separate service here in this particular case.
And then it just gives you a summary of what it's going to do, making sure that you've selected all the options in there and you click on next and it will start configuring those things for you.
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on in the background. I know we tend to like to think that wizards are simple operations, but actually there's lots of considerations that need to be planned out and need to have been put in place. What we've just shown you there is simply the result. You know, once you've done all of those things, once you've got those certificates, once you've thought about high availability and farms and all these other factors, you simply run the wizard and away it goes, and it configures itself. And then what you'll end up with, I mean, that will take quite a while to do, what you'll end up with is an endpoint. You end up with a communication endpoint. You can actually check to see an XML file, and if you see that XML file displayed, you know that your service is up and configured, and that you can you've done the first part of the ADFS configuration wizard. Great. So then what we need to do is we then need to go to Office 365 and tell Office 365, hey, Office 365, there is this domain, this Federation service out there, and it wants you to contact the Federation service, and we're going to integrate the ADFS with Office 365. And the way that we do that is by converting our domain from a standard domain to a federated domain. Once it's a federated domain, then Office 365 knows that when a user attempts to authenticate to Office 365, it then needs to go through the claims process and generate a claim for that user, submit it to ADFS. ADFS then will authenticate it to Active Directory and then pass back the token, the encrypted token, and Office 365 will then use that encrypted token to generate a logon token, which then allows the user to actually use the service itself. So when we're doing things like when we're preparing domains for conversion, what you need to think about is to make sure that you always prepare the root domains before any subdomains. So if you're going to use a subdomain for ADFS, then you need to make sure that you've added and prepared the root domain first before you convert that subdomain. Converting a single domain, fairly straightforward, and I think, I made that point, if you are going to do multiple domains, if you've got multiple root domains, then you can convert them in any order, it doesn't matter, but if you've got child domains, then it must be the parent that gets converted first before the child. In terms of managing the ADFS servers themselves, now there are self-signed certificates that ADFS uses for signing the tokens that it provides across to across the relying party trust. Now that process is actually is automatically managed. What you do need to make sure that if you opt out of that automatic management process, you know, it might be that you want to use third-party signed certificates or something like that, then you need to make sure that you have an event in your calendar to remind you to replace the certificates at a certain date. But that's basically all of this sort of areas generally sort of automated. What you can do as a manual option is to change over from you can change if you've got on an ADFS server farm where you've got the Windows internal database. One of those servers, the first server you install, is a primary, and the other one's a secondary. So the primary has access to the read-write configuration database. If you want to change that to one of the other servers, then you need to promote one of the other servers and promote to a primary and demote the existing primary to a secondary. And again, that's done through a PowerShell command there. And then that makes sure that you've now got a new primary server, and then you can replace or update or do whatever what you want to do with the secondary server, or join another server, remove it from the farm and join another server into that farm. If you want to do a convert back again, if you suddenly realize that ADFS is too much like hard work, or you really don't want there's no more business requirement for ADFS, then what we can do is convert our domain back from federated to standard. What that will do is all your Office 365 accounts will then require a password reset, because remember, previously they've been getting their logon information from Active Directory and through ADFS. So what you'll do is it will set up this force change password flag. When the user next logged on, they will then be prompted for a password change, which they'll need to do. And then you can either implement password synchronization, or you can go back to just having dir sync with different passwords in Office 365. So some best practices then. Remember, we've got this capacity planning tool, the spreadsheet. Get hold of that. Use that. Check out all the documentation that we've got. In fact, I think I might have written a bit of that, actually. You never know. that was a while ago. There's some more recent versions of it, more up-to-date versions of that available now. Think about your high availability and how that's going to work, in terms of your ADFS proxies and in terms of your ADFS server arrays. Make sure you've got the required ports open in the firewall. Again, typically that's just port 443, the SSL port. ADFS, you can now mix roles, but again, the recommendation is to have separate ADFS servers. And think about your browsers and clients and test cases, particularly if you're integrating it with mobile devices. You're going to need to make sure that works properly with ADFS. Usual stuff, hotfixes, .NET framework updates, all of that good stuff. Make sure they're all installed. Certificates, make sure you've requested those with your private key. And again, you can get free certificates for test purposes. You can actually go and get a free level one certificate available. There's several sites that will do that for you. In this environment, you're probably going to want to have a sort of higher level two certificate or something. I think in this case, we used a 2048-bit key, asymmetric key. You may want to think about a sort of 4000-bit asymmetric key. So remember that there's a constant move to get sort of more and more secure certificates. And then make sure you federate your parent domain before your subdomains. Right, so to finish off this module, we're just going to talk in a similar way about our proxy servers. Again, I've also mentioned the fact that our proxy server roles, that within Windows Server 2012 R2, there is this new web application proxy role. More will be published about that over the next sort of few months, and you'll be able to see how that will integrate with Office 365. So we'll talk about preparing the proxy, installing the role, then configuring it through the wizard, and then configuring our proxy settings, and then finish off with some best practices. Right, so with proxy installation, again, the job of the proxy is to protect, to proxy out and provide a level of isolation between the incoming client request to the ADFS server and the ADFS server itself. Okay, so it acts as an SSL endpoint, and that then rebinds and proxies the request across into the ADFS servers. So it's because it's SSL, therefore we need to have public certificates because it's binding a certificate to the public web, to the default IIS website, just as we did with the ADFS server role. You will need some form of load balancing, and network load balancing will do absolutely fine. If you're going to do this in Windows Azure, then you need to think about using Windows Azure load balancing to load balance your ADFS proxies. And you'll probably put them into a separate network as well to within Azure. And then to say the DNS host, the external IP address of your network load balanced array needs to match the DNS host name, which needs to match your certificate name. You've got to get that one-to-one matching all the way through. Installing the role itself, again, that's simply done through the Add Roles and Features wizard in Windows Server 2012. You just select the role, and when you, in the role options, it then says what you want to do. Do you want to put an ADFS or do you want an ADFS proxy? That way you then make sure that you've got your public certificate, you've exported that with its private key, and then assign that to the default website in IIS. Making sure that it's operational, once you've actually installed it, then you go through the wizard, and it's a bit like what we saw with the ADFS server, except that it now then asks you where do you want to connect to, and you put in then the host name of the backend, i.e. the host name that matches to the IP address of your load balanced ADFS server farm array, okay, so that you're pointing to your backend array, and also a username and a password for the account details to manage that account. What you've got to remember is that your ADFS proxies are going to be in a work group. They're not going to know anything about that domain, so you need to put it in the form of domain name / username and put in the service account that you saw Martin configure earlier, and then that connection string points to the backend. You'll see some more events in Event Viewer. Event 198 is a good sign of success. Again, check the URL, make sure that you get that Federation metadata XML file appearing. You can then go and do things like customize your forms logon page. And this is what you were talking about with the Windows Server 2012 R2 role, wasn't it?
Yeah. So there's now PowerShell commands, surprise, surprise.
Wouldn't we know it?
Customize all of those different elements of the proxy page.
So you can customize a user interface by using a command line interface.
Yes.
That's quite awesome. I mean, there must be some horrendous switches in that one.
Yeah.
But this is things like your instructional text as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And URLs to logos and things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So illegal information and so on that you want to put onto your FormSpace authentication page.
Indeed. So other things we can then do is also we can control access to our proxy servers and do things like you could, for example, block all extranet access. You could say that only people from particular countries, or there are certain rules that you can configure, to configure access control at the proxy level to particular sort of types of devices, particular users and so on, and particular browser types, and prevent them from authenticating. So some best practices then for our proxies. Make sure they're not domain joined. We've already covered that one. Put them in the perimeter network rather than on the local area network. Make sure that you're using your capacity planning tool to identify how many proxy servers you need. You will require some form of high availability, and network load balancing works just as well, or you might look at Azure load balancing. Make sure you've got the required firewall ports open on the outside and again on the inside to allow the connection from the proxy to the ADFS server. But it doesn't require things like port 445 open because there's no Active Directory lookups taking place at that point. Again, keep them as separate roles, although that advice changes with Windows Server 2012 R2, doesn't it? You can have them as...
Yeah.
Yeah, so
you can combine it, but it is really not a best practice to combine things. So,
just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
Think about test cases for your different browsers and your different client types as well, and then hotfixes, .NET framework, all that sort of goodness. Make sure they're the latest versions. Shouldn't be any problems there. And then make sure you've got your correct certificates and you've exported your private keys. Right, so that's it really for ADFS. And again, I apologize for the fact that was a sort of a 10,000-foot view of how we configure ADFS. So lots more good stuff and reference materials out there. There's documents, there's pages and pages of information. But what I would suggest is come on course 20346B and actually do it for real. And you will roll out a full ADFS environment within Windows Azure and configure that and get on your certificates and get it all working and hunky-dory. And the students that we had on the Beta Teach recently really enjoyed that. They had an absolutely fantastic time. Okay, so in our final module, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about the troubleshooting and monitoring of Office 365 and the various tools you can use to carry that out.